What do video game XP, a 1984 California law, and like 1,000 credit cards have in common?
I mean, on the surface, absolutely nothing. It kind of sounds like a random collection of trivia, honestly.
But they are actually the specific tools you need to, hack the financial matrix and build serious leverage.
Yeah, the XP builds your foundational knowledge, right?
Exactly. And the 1984 law gives you this legal sword to fight massive data brokers. And those 1,000 credit cards, that's the literal capital used to bypass traditional banking and acquire real estate.
It's wild stuff.
It really is. So, welcome to a deep dive into the mechanics of wealth, credit, and business growth. Today, our mission is to basically demystify the financial systems that practically control our lives. We want to give you a shortcut to being highly financially literate and, well, just well-informed.
And we are synthesizing a truly fascinating stack of materials for you today to do that. We're looking at the design specs for this new AI-powered financial literacy platform called Money Smarts.
Which is super interesting.
Oh, yeah. Plus, we're digging into the extensive business consulting portfolio of industry veteran Dan Kost. That's alongside the highly anticipated 2026 edition of his pioneer work, the first book about credit repair.
So let's start at the very beginning of the financial journey. For Gen Z and millennials, the traditional financial world just feels like this rigged, jargon-filled
Oh,
maze.
totally.
The standard model for financial education in this country seems to be like make a terrible mistake when you're 18, completely ruin your credit, and then spend a decade paying for it while you finally figure out how things actually work.
Yeah, it is a purely reactive system. You only learn about the consequences of debt after you're already drowning in it. But what we're seeing in the source material, specifically with the Money Smarts platform, is this massive push for proactive education.
And crucially, it's delivered in a format that actually speaks the language of a younger generation, rather than just handing them some dry, impenetrable textbook.
Exactly. I mean, Money Smarts is designed from the ground up for Gen Z and millennials, and it makes learning about money completely free.
And by free, the specs emphasize they mean actually free. There is no credit card required to sign up.
Yeah, and the scope is highly comprehensive. The platform features over 50 lessons spread across six core modules.
That's a lot of content.
It is. You're looking at budgeting basics, credit score essentials, debt management, investing 101, emergency fund planning, and even retirement planning.
But I want to focus on the delivery method because it sounds like you're leveling up a character in an RPG, except, the character is you and the loot is actual wealth.
Right.
You earn XP, you unlock these digital badges, you compete on leaderboards. But I do have to push back a little on this concept.
Okay, lay it on me.
Okay, let's unpack this. Does earning a digital, like, budget master badge actually translate to real-world financial discipline? I mean, if I have that badge, does it realistically stop me from walking into a car dealership and financing a vehicle I can't afford on a terrible 84-month loan?
That is the critical question. I mean, if it were just digital stickers, it would be useless. The gamification, the XP, and the leaderboards is simply the psychological hook to keep the user logging in. What's fascinating here is how it bridges the gap between knowing you should budget and actually understanding the mechanics of money.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, the actual mechanism driving the behavioral change is the AI-powered tutoring. They're using Claude AI, and it employs Socratic teaching methods.
Let's unpack that really quick. Socratic teaching essentially means answering a question with another question, right?
Essentially, yes. Instead of acting like a textbook that just hands you a rule like save 20% of your income, the AI acts as an active tutor.
Oh, okay.
So if you ask it how to afford a car, it asks you to break down your current rent, your income, and your other obligations. It asks you what trade-offs you are actually willing to make for a $600 car payment.
Wow, so it puts the work on you.
Exactly. It forces you to think critically about how compound interest functions against you in an 84-month loan.
So it's bridging the gap between passive knowledge and active application.
Yeah, you are building mental muscle memory. When you actively solve financial puzzles in a gamified, low-stakes environment, your brain really learns the mechanics of money.
That makes a lot of sense.
So when you finally sit at that dealership, you aren't just remembering some rule from a book. Your brain recognizes the terrible loan structure as a bad puzzle you already know how to solve, and you just walk away.
Okay, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But let's look at the harsh reality of the system for a second. You can't build wealth if your foundation is cracked.
No, you really can't.
You could ace all the Money Smarts courses, understand compound interest perfectly, and top the leaderboards, but a bad credit score can just completely stop you in your tracks.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, imagine trying to buy your first home and your mortgage gets denied because of a $50 medical bill from 3 years ago that went to the wrong address.
Yeah.
You didn't even know it existed, but it tanks your score.
And that specific emotional pain point is exactly why Dan Kost's pioneer work is so critical to this discussion.
Yeah, he's a foundational figure in the credit repair space.
He was actually instrumental in pioneering the California Credit Services Act way back in 1984.
Over 40 years ago.
Right. At a time when nobody in America really understood that credit reports contained errors or that ordinary consumers had a legal right to fight those errors.
Which is just crazy to think about now.
It is. The credit bureaus fought him. And they lost. That 1984 state legislation became the model for the federal framework we rely on today.
Wow.
And reading his 2026 edition of the first book about credit repair, his core truth remains identical. Your credit report can be wrong, those errors can destroy your financial life, and you have the absolute legal right to fix it.
The book pulls the curtain back on the credit bureaus, too. You know, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, the big three.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people implicitly assume these are official government agencies, sort of like the DMV, but for your money.
Oh, a lot of people think that.
But they are not. They are massive, highly profitable, private data brokers.
They do not generate any original information. They simply collect it from furnishers using an automated digital format called Metro 2. Then they package your data and sell it.
Wait, before we go further, can we pause and define those two terms, furnishers and Metro 2?
Of course. So a furnisher is just industry jargon for any company you owe money to. Your credit card company, your auto lender, your cell phone provider.
They furnish the data.
Exactly. They furnish the data to the bureaus. And Metro 2 is simply the standardized digital language they use.
Okay, got it.
It allows a massive bank to mass upload the monthly payment history of millions of customers to Experian in one swift motion.
So what does this all mean? If the bureaus are just private companies collecting this Metro 2 data and they're making billions of dollars a year selling it.
We are not the customers.
If we aren't the customers, who is?
The banks, the landlords, the insurance companies buying the reports, they are the customers. Which means, as consumers, our data is the product.
Ooh, wow. We are the product.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that dynamic explains the entire architecture of the credit system. If the lenders are the customers paying for comprehensive data, your dispute threatens the integrity of the product the bureaus are selling.
Oh, because if they delete it, the data is gone.
Right. Every time negative data is deleted, the report becomes theoretically less valuable to a lender.
So the bureaus have a massive financial disincentive to make disputes easy for you. If they make it simple to remove negative marks, they literally undermine their own product.
Which is why their automated phone systems are absolute labyrinths. And their online dispute portals often try to trap you into accepting their version of events.
It's infuriating.
It is. You cannot rely on their customer service. You have to use the law to force their hand.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics of how you actually do that. Because once you realize the system isn't built to help you, you need a very specific strategy to take control.
You.
In the 2026 blueprint, Kost breaks this down into a three-phase master strategy.
Yes. Phase one is to lock down the system by freezing your credit.
But the book includes a massive counterintuitive caveat here, right? You do not freeze the big three during your active dispute period.
Right. You need Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion open and accessible so that when you win a dispute, the furnishers can easily update your file with the positive result.
So what are we freezing then?
Phase one requires you to freeze the secondary bureaus.
Okay, this hidden ecosystem of secondary bureaus is just wild to read about. We spend all our time stressing over FICO scores and the big three, but there are dozens of specialty consumer reporting agencies tracking specific fragments of your life.
Oh yeah, like check systems.
Right, if you have a negative mark there for like an overdrawn account, you could be locked out of getting a basic checking account at almost any bank for up to 5 years.
It's devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have CoreLogic, which tracks eviction and rental histories specifically for landlords.
So you could boast an 800 FICO score, but if CoreLogic has an inaccurate eviction record from a college apartment, you're getting denied the lease.
Exactly. And LexisNexis holds this massive repository of public records, tax liens, and insurance claims.
So why exactly are we freezing them before we dispute something with Equifax? Like, what is the mechanism there?
It is all about cutting off their supply lines.
Okay.
When you send a dispute letter to Equifax challenging a public record or a collection, Equifax doesn't always have the internal documentation to verify it.
Right.
So their automated systems will digitally ping a secondary bureau, like LexisNexis, to cross-reference and verify the data.
Oh, I see.
If you have placed a security freeze on LexisNexis, Equifax's system hits a brick wall. They are legally barred from accessing it.
And if they can't verify it?
By federal law, they must delete it.
That is brilliant. Okay, so phase one is freezing the secondary bureaus to block verification. Phase two is pull and map.
Yes. You go to annualcreditreport.com, pull your massive complete credit picture, and meticulously map out every single error on a master log.
Like wrong account opening dates, duplicate collection accounts for the same debt, maybe a negative mark that's past the legal 7-year reporting limit. You just map it all out.
Exactly. Which sets up phase three, dispute, verify, remove.
The final strike.
You take that map and you send specific dispute letters for every error via certified mail to the bureaus.
The certified mail part is crucial.
Very crucial. Because you need a paper trail of the exact date they received it. This leverages your primary weapon, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, or FCRA.
Because the FCRA requires that every single item on your credit report be 100% accurate, complete, and verifiable.
It is federal law. When you dispute an item, the bureau and the furnisher have exactly 30 days to investigate and respond.
Wow, a strict 30-day window.
Yeah. Let's say a third-party collection agency bought an old medical debt of yours. During the sale, they lost the original signature paperwork.
Which happens all the time.
All the time. If you dispute that debt and they cannot produce the verifying documents within that strict 30-day window, the law mandates it must be deleted from your file.
30 days or it's gone. That is so powerful. That brings us to another fascinating mechanism in the book regarding debt collectors, the deletion agreement.
Oh, this is a great one.
Because when you're negotiating a settlement on a valid debt, say a $10,000 credit card charge-off, you have to understand the collector's business model.
Right. They buy debt for pennies on the dollar. They might have purchased your $10,000 debt for $500.
So they will often settle with you for 30 or 40 cents on the dollar. You might agree to pay $3,000 to clear it.
But you have to be careful here.
Yeah, I want to challenge this. Because if I just pay them the $3,000, the account gets marked as a paid collection on my report. And a paid collection still completely tanks your score in most traditional underwriting models.
Yes, it does. You need it completely removed.
But why would a debt collector agree to completely delete the record just because I offer them a fraction of what I owe? Don't they hold all the power?
They hold the data, but you hold the cash.
Uh-huh.
Their incentive is cash flow, not justice. If they bought the paper for $500, your $3,000 offer represents a massive return on investment for them.
That's true.
But before you wire a single dime, you demand a deletion agreement in writing. You leverage your cash. You say, I have the funds ready today, but only if you legally bind yourselves to instruct all three bureaus to delete the trade line entirely.
So you essentially buy back your own pristine history.
You do. Huh. And once your personal credit is clean, we see this massive shift in how you navigate the financial matrix. It transforms from a defensive shield into an offensive weapon.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I like to compare this progression to engineering. You know, repairing personal credit is like fixing the foundation of a house, but costs business consulting is like architecting a skyscraper.
That's a perfect analogy.
Which perfectly transitions us to that wild anecdote about Dan Kost when he was just 21 years old. He collected 1,000 credit cards.
1,000?
And the book notes he used them to flip real estate. But let's clarify the mechanism there, because you can't just swipe a standard credit card to buy a house.
No, you really can't.
Yeah.
But what a young Dan Kost realized was that every single card represented an unsecured line of credit.
Right.
He wasn't viewing credit reactively as debt to buy consumer goods. He viewed it proactively as leverage. By pooling those cards, he created massive instant liquidity.
So how did he actually move the money?
Through cash advances, utilizing balance transfer checks deposited directly into a checking account, and using the physical cards to pay for all the raw materials and contractor labor on a flip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, preserving his actual cash for the down payments. When a distressed property hit the market, he didn't have to wait 45 days for a bank underwriter to approve a traditional mortgage.
Who had the capital to act the exact same day.
Exactly. He secured deals other investors couldn't, because he had engineered his own liquidity.
Okay, but using personal credit cards to fund real estate flips sounds absolutely terrifying. Like, if the housing market dips or the flip goes bad, you are personally on the hook for all of it.
Oh, it'd lead to personal bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And that is exactly why you eventually have to graduate from personal credit to business credit.
Right. I look at the transition from personal credit to business credit, like setting up legal firewalls on a ship. If you run your business using your personal social security number and the business hits an iceberg, the whole ship goes down.
Yes.
But if you establish true business credit, you seal the watertight doors. The business might take on water, but your personal assets, your home, your savings stay afloat.
That is a highly accurate way to frame it.
Right.
Business credit operates in an entirely different universe. You are no longer using your social security number.
So what are you using?
You incorporate, you get an employer identification number, or EIN, from the IRS, and you register for a DUNS number.
Let's unpack the business jargon a bit. What is a DUNS number, and how do you build credit without a FICO score?
Okay, so Dun & Bradstreet is essentially the Equifax of the corporate world. They track business credit. The DUNS number is your unique corporate identifier.
Got it.
Instead of a FICO score, they issue a Paydex score, which ranges from 0 to 100.
And how do you actually get that score up?
Through what are called Net 30 vendor accounts. You buy supplies for your business today, and the vendor gives you 30 days to pay the invoice.
Okay.
If you pay it in 15 days, your Paydex score goes up. It simply measures how promptly a business pays its obligations relative to the terms.
So you're basically proving you can handle corporate cash flow.
Build a strong Paydex score, and the business can secure its own operating capital, inventory lines, and credit cards without requiring a personal guarantee from you.
Which brings us to the final major piece of our sources today, Dan Kost's business consulting services. Because building those firewalls and managing corporate cash flow is incredibly complex.
It is. This raises an important question, though. How many businesses fail simply because they lack the structural financial literacy that Kost provides through his consulting and turnaround services?
I'm guessing a lot. His expertise really scales up to help entire organizations navigate this stuff.
Yeah, his consulting work covers the entire life cycle of an enterprise. He does startup consulting, helping founders structure those firewalls correctly from day one.
Mm-hmm.
He advises on integrating AI to streamline operations and outpace competitors.
But where it gets really intense is his work in reorganization, turnarounds, and acting as a bankruptcy trustee.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's look at a hypothetical scenario to understand what a turnaround consultant actually does. Say you have a mid-sized manufacturing company. They have great products, sales are up, but suddenly they can't make payroll and they are facing bankruptcy. Why does that happen?
Usually it's a structural flaw in cash flow management.
Okay.
Let's say this manufacturing company offers its clients net 60 terms, meaning clients have 60 days to pay for the goods. But the company's own suppliers demand net 30 terms.
Oh, so they have to pay for the raw materials in 30 days, but they don't get paid for the finished product for 60 days.
Exactly. That 30-day gap bleeds the company dry. They run out of operating cash, even though they're technically profitable on paper.
That is wild.
Kost steps into a situation like that, identifies the cash flow mismatch, renegotiates the debt terms with creditors, and restructures the operations.
Yeah.
He utilizes complex financial modeling to predict these crunches before they even happen.
And if the company is too far gone,
he steps in as a bankruptcy trustee. He literally takes over management of the company during the legal proceedings, prioritizing the creditors, liquidating assets if necessary, or charting a path for the business to emerge from bankruptcy leaner and functional.
It is a massive scope of work. And looking at all our sources today, it really is a cohesive journey.
It really is.
Whether you are a Gen Z student using the gamified Money Smarts platform to finally figure out the mechanics of budgeting, an individual freezing your secondary bureaus and sending certified letters under the FCRA to repair your foundation, or a CEO bringing in Dan Kost for turnaround consulting to save your entire enterprise, the underlying rule is identical.
Yeah, the rule is that the matrix is governed by highly specific laws, mechanisms, and algorithms.
Right.
Once you understand the mechanics, how the AI tutors, how the bureaus verify data, how cash flow dictates corporate survival, you stop being a passive product of the system and you start being the player.
Before we wrap up, we have to leave you with one final provocative thought regarding the future of all this. In the future of credit section of the sources, there is this massive shift happening right now away from traditional credit bureaus towards something called open banking.
Yes. Historically, lenders relied on your FICO score and your credit report, which is really just a static history of your past debt.
Uh-huh.
But open banking is a fundamental change in underwriting.
Yes.
Consumers can grant AI algorithms and lenders direct, read-only access to their real-time bank accounts.
Meaning they aren't just looking at whether you paid a credit card on time 3 years ago. They are analyzing your actual daily cash flow today.
They are analyzing your income deposits, your rent payments, your utility bills, and your daily spending habits in real time.
Wow.
For people with thin files who've been excluded from traditional credit, this is a breakthrough because it proves they manage their actual cash responsibly, even without a credit card.
But it also opens up a wild new frontier of surveillance.
Very true.
So here is the question for you to mull over as you go about your day. With the rise of open banking and AI analysis, will the traditional three-digit FICO score eventually go completely extinct? And if it does, will your daily digital behavior, you know, every single coffee you buy, every subscription you pay for, every minor spending habit become your new, inescapable financial reputation?
The old matrix was based strictly on your history of debt. The new matrix might just be a real-time algorithmic analysis of how you live your daily life.
We started this deep dive into the sources by asking what video game XP and credit scores have in common. As it turns out, with open banking and AI tracking your every move, the game you're playing and the real-world financial matrix might soon be the exact same thing. Level up carefully.